The chairman had fully expected Dr. Carlyle Pereira to be even more dogmatically assertive than usual, now that his prediction of a Raman hurricane had been confirmed. To His Excellency's great surprise, Pereira was remarkably subdued and accepted the congratulations of his colleagues in a manner as near to embarrassment as he was ever likely to achieve. The exobiologist, in fact, was deeply mortified. The spectacular breakup of the cylindrical sea was a much more obvious phenomenon than the hurricane winds, yet he had completely overlooked it. To have remembered that hot air rises, but to have forgotten that hot ice contracts, was not an achievement of which he could be very proud. However, he would soon get over it and revert to his normal Olympian self-confidence. When the chairman offered him the floor and asked what further climatic changes he expected, he was very careful to hedge his bets.
"You must realize," he explained, "that the meteorology of a world as strange as Rama may have many other surprises. But if my calculations are correct, there will be no further storms, and conditions will soon be stable. There will be a slow temperature rise until perihelion and beyond, but that won't concern us, as Endeavour will have had to leave long before that.
So it should soon be safe to go back inside?"
Probably. We should certainly know in 48 hours.
"A return is imperative," said the ambassador for Mercury. "We have to learn everything we possibly can about Rama. The situation has now changed completely."
"I think we know what you mean, but would you care to elaborate?"
"Of course. Until now, we have assumed that Rama is lifeless, or at any rate, uncontrolled. But we can no longer pretend that it is a derelict. Even if there are no life forms aboard, it may be directed by robot mechanisms, programmed to carry out some mission, perhaps one highly disadvantageous to us. Unpalatable though it may be, we must consider the question of self-defense."
There was a babble of protesting voices, and the chairman had to hold up his hand to restore order.
"Let His Excellency finish," he pleaded. "Whether we like the idea or not, it should be considered seriously."
"With all due respect to the ambassador," said Dr. Conrad Taylor in his most disrespectful voice, "I think we can rule out as naive the fear of malevolent intervention. Creatures as advanced as the Ramans must have correspondingly developed morals. Otherwise, they would have destroyed themselves, as we nearly did in the 20th century. I've made that quite clear in my new book, Ethos and Cosmos. I hope you received your copy."
"Yes, thank you, though I'm afraid the pressure of other matters has not allowed me to read beyond the introduction. However, I'm familiar with the general thesis. We may have no malevolent intentions towards an ant-heap, but if we want to build a house on the same site..."
"This is as bad as the Pandora Party. It's nothing less than interstellar xenophobia."
"Please, gentlemen, this is getting us nowhere. Mr. Ambassador, you still have the floor."
The chairman glared across 380,000 kilometers of space at Conrad Taylor, who reluctantly subsided, like a volcano biding its time.
"Thank you," said the ambassador for Mercury. "The danger may be unlikely, but where the future of the human race is involved, we can take no chances. And if I may say so, we Hermians may be particularly concerned. We may have more cause for alarm than anyone else."
Dr. Taylor snorted audibly, but was quelled by another glare from the moon.
"Why Mercury more than any other planet?" asked the chairman.
"Look at the dynamics of the situation. Rama is already inside our orbit. It is only an assumption that it will go round the sun and head on out again into space. Suppose it carries out a braking maneuver. If it does so, this will be at perihelion, about 30 days from now. My scientists tell me that if the entire velocity change is carried out there, Rama will end up in a circular orbit only 25 million kilometers from the sun. From here, it could dominate the solar system.